Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Workforce and Business Development, Finance and Policy. I call this meeting to order. This meeting is being conducted remotely pursuant to Rule 10.01. This remote hearing can be viewed on the House webcast. I would like to ask everyone here, please mute your mics unless you've been asked to speak. With that, I'll ask the House Committee Legislative Assistant, Mr. Badri, to now call the roll.
Chair Noor.
Present.
Chair Noor, present. Vice Chair Zhang.
Present.
Vice Chair Zhang, present. Lead Hamilton.
Present.
Lead Hamilton, present. Baker. Baker. Daphne.
Daphne, present.
Daphne, present. Frankie.
Frankie, present.
Frankie, present. Greenman.
Greenman, present.
Greenman, present. Cagle.
Present.
Cagle, present. Khatiza Watun.
Present.
Khatiza Watun, present. Olson.
Present.
Olson, present. Zhang.
Present.
Zhang, present. Baker. Baker. Chair Noor, we have a quorum.
Members, there's a quorum present. With that, we do have a few bills to go through today, and I'd like to start with House File 3938. Representative Jordan, welcome to the committee. I'll move your House File 3938 to be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Please tell us about your bill. Welcome to the committee. Did we lose?
Mr. Chair, I just let her back into the room. Thank you.
All right. Sorry about that. Technical issues, members. Welcome back. I think I moved your bill. Please tell us about your bill, Representative Jordan.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, members of the committee, for bearing with me while I have some technical difficulties. But no matter what the technical difficulties, I'm still excited to present House File 3938, which would appropriate $500,000 to Minnesota Diversified Industries, or MDI, to partner with the state of Minnesota to expand career skills programming. MDI is a social enterprise manufacturer, which is headquartered in my district in Northeast Minneapolis, with additional locations in Grand Rapids, Hibbing, and Cohasset. They produce plastic totes for a variety of industries, providing kitting and assembly services, and precision cutting of medical goods and production services. They are unique in that 50% of their employees have a disability of some kind, and MDI is leading discussions on how businesses can include people with disabilities into the workforce, and they are interested in expanding this work, especially with their career skills program, which will help employees with disabilities build career and professional skills and secure employment. In a time where we're looking for ways to demonstrate our support for workforce development, small investments like this will inspire innovation and build upon the organizational expertise to make big differences. And at this time, I'd like to turn it over to my testifiers who can describe it in greater detail.
Thank you so much, Representative Jordan. I see your first testifier. I see Smith.
Good morning.
Welcome, Mr. Smith, and please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Okay, good morning. My name is Delmon Smith. I've been working at MDI for about 3 years now. I'm better at speaking off the cuff, so Gene's going to kind of guide me so I don't take all your time up.
So the first question I want to ask you, Del, is what caused you to come to work at MDI?
Well, I had had multiple brain injuries and was having to learn how to reinvent myself. So someone actually referred me to you, and I came and found out that I felt more included working in this environment than I had started feeling excluded in the regular work environment. That's how I came to work here, by referral.
And what does it mean for you to have your job here at MDI?
It means I can be the patriarch of a family, and I can still have that confidence going to work, being a part of something. And not just being a part of something, but being different and not having to feel like I'm different. You know, that's what it means being here at MDI for me. And we're always learning. And we're learning new things as we go through each day. And that really does test me, because I never thought that I could learn anymore.
So you got to participate in our career skills classes here at MDI. What did it mean for you to participate in the class?
Well, it opened up doors that I realized needed to be opened. You know, I had skills that I didn't even consider being skills. But in the class, as we went through the different projects and what have you, I was like, I didn't know that was a skill. But we seldom will look at ourselves as like certain things we do all the time as being skills until you have to start all over again. When you're starting all over again, work skills kind of introduces you to a different way of looking at that. So that's what it meant for me to be in there. And I really did suggest it to my daughter, Lord rest her soul, who had cancer, to get my grandchildren involved in career skills in Rochester, Minnesota, because that's how much I thought of it.
So you've touched on this a little bit, Dell. What do you think it might mean for others outside of MDI to be able to take the career skills class?
I think it would mean a lot because, like I said, you unlock an understanding of things inside of us that we don't even realize we have. You know, we don't realize certain things you do every day are skills. And this teaches you to look at yourself differently and understand that the things we do can be considered skills that we can market. So
Dell, from when you first started with us, you've had a couple other barriers that have come up. One has been the death of your daughter, which was a challenge, but you've had your own physical or health challenge. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Since being here, I had been diagnosed with colon cancer and kidney cancer. And, you know, I never, ever, could have imagined some of the people we worked with here were fighting and battling cancer. And throughout my process, I was able to go to them. And I don't think I could have made it unless I seen people showing strength that I never even could have imagined having to use. But when I worked here and I seen some of those people with cancer, and they were worse off than I was, working through it, it empowered me that I could do it. You know what I mean? That was special. That was a godsend to me.
Thank you for sharing, Dell. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Mr. Smith, for sharing your story. And we're wishing you all the best and making sure that we're here to support you in any way we can, as much as we can. Thank you also to Ms. Eglinton for the help with that process. And now I turn it over to you for your testimony. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Jean Eglinton. I'm the Director of Employment Services at MDI. I have more than 35 years of experience working with people with disabilities in employment settings, and I'm in my eighth year with MDI. What I can tell you is that MDI's workforce development model works. Our success is attributed to our culture of providing support to employees in a respectful and inclusive environment. Between our licensed day services in Cohasset, Minnesota, and supporting more than 100 employees with varying disabilities at our manufacturing facilities, we are still less than 5% reliant on government funding. MDI has a goal to impact 2,500 lives by 2025. Our vision to make that happen builds on our career skills work that focuses on the soft skills that employees need to be successful at work, including communication, positive attitude, problem solving, customer service, as Dell talked about. Nearly 300 participants have completed a career skills class, and we have had tremendous feedback. 96% of the participants said they were positively impacted by the class. 80% said they are better at problem solving having taken the class, and 88% said they now show more responsibility for their actions. We know that if our career skills classes help people with disabilities build skills, it can help everyone. We are moving forward with a vision of transforming career skills into new formats to increase impact. As you can imagine, our in-person model was turned on its head when COVID challenges hit. By January of 2021, we started to offer virtual career skills classes outside of our organization. Virtual career skills classes gave organizations the chance to participate from a remote setting with the trainer in a different location over Zoom. We've been able to reach multiple organizations at the same time using Zoom.
The feedback received from these participating organizations has been great. There is, however, a barrier that still exists. The class is offered at a specific time, specific dates, and so if it doesn't work for an organization or a person, they're not able to participate. Therefore, we've expanded our vision of offering career skills in more accessible formats, and we'll be piloting these options in the coming year. First, on-demand skills, on-demand career skills, where at the click of your mouse, any group can participate in a recorded class on the Unified Work Learning Platform. Second, mobile career skills, where the class will be brought to more rural parts of the state and offered in person. And finally, we envision virtual reality classes where participants will be able to wear a set of goggles, for instance, like these, and practice their interviewing skills, as well as in the future to be able to see a virtual world and what it might be like to work in a manufacturing plant like MDI or a retail store, convenience store, or office setting. Eric will speak more to our vision of unified work that brings consultation, training, and support to businesses to help them remove system barriers and hire more people with disabilities. This concept is a collaboration with organizations and businesses including Medtronic, Special Olympics Minnesota, United Health Group, and Boston Scientific, who continue to help us create and implement our consultation concept. United Health Group and Boston Scientific have both increased their efforts to hire people with disabilities. Our vision of unified work consulting and career skills training classes encompasses everything we think is needed to advance employment for people with disabilities. Thank you to the committee for your consideration and allowing MDI a bit of time to showcase our employees and their work.
Thank you so much, Ms. Eglinton, for your testimony. Appreciate that. And I would like to now invite Mr. Black to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
I'm Eric Black, the president and CEO of MDI. I appreciate the time, Chair Knorr, Representative Jordan, for authoring our bill, Lead Hamilton, and the committee members for allowing us this opportunity. As you can see from the testimony that you've heard, we really have a gem at MDI, and I spent 23 years in corporate America before coming to the nonprofit world. And what I saw at MDI, I was like, wow, you know, having all of this capabilities within our organization, the vision now is to unlock that. Being a nonprofit, we really are focused on now trying to be a community steward and figuring out how do we transfer internal expertise, IP, and knowledge to the communities that we operate in throughout the state. I'm on the board of directors for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, so I spent time in the state talking to other leaders, and workforce, workforce, workforce is kind of the top three issues we've been facing. As I asked him, I was like, have you ever thought about employing people with disabilities? I always see that. Tell me more. No one says no, but it's always a conversation piece for tell me more. And so it becomes part of a business growth in their diversity, equity, inclusion, and also bridging that workforce gap to look at alternative ways of bringing people into the workforce who have been previously excluded or under-included or underemployed. We believe MDI has a role to play in doing that. The things that we have learned and able to transition individuals through their skills and learnings, we want to pass that out to the state. This bill would allow us to have additional funding and capital needed to grow and scale this opportunity, and then to be able to have the social science around the impact of this within the realm of people with disabilities. But then also what I'll show you and demonstrate is that as we begin to build technology and programs that work for people with disabilities, they work for all people. It's weird how that works in reverse. So this is an avenue that we also know can work for other underserved or underrepresented communities, other individuals who are just coming out of school and wanting to transition into the workforce but don't have that experience. And I kind of say our program is having experience before the experience. And I'm going to demonstrate virtual reality for you now. And one of the things about virtual reality is your brain receives information through its senses, whether that's your touch, your vision, your hearing, and it can't interpret whether it's real or virtual. So you can create an experience and build confidence in an individual without them having to actually go through the experience. And if you do this through repetition, you now allow individuals to scale up. So now I'm going to share my screen and hopefully everybody can see this. Is this visual? Or no, I had to hit the share button. Here we go. Okay, thank you. This is one of our MDI facilities, and this is virtual reality. If we had on the goggles that Jim Dream demonstrated, we would hit a button down here and we would be able to reflect it. One of the things that has been important for MDI is not only to build technology like this, but be able to get it out in the community at a cost. So the glasses that Gene showed you, these are glasses manufactured by people with disabilities at a cost of around about $15. You can order glasses on Amazon, nice case, great plastic glasses, pop out, $17. So we're under $20 per person, or a Google Box set of glasses that are at $6. So when we think about the scalability of a program of being able to reach, you know, 100 individuals for potentially less than $1,000 cost, which means it's really easy to give the programming for free, I think that's part of the disruption that we want to have. If you have the goggles on and you're looking, you would be able to navigate through a facility like MDI. This particular video is wanting to highlight safety. We've all had safety training. We know how that class can go in interface, but imagine having the opportunity to find safety hazards within a work environment.
According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, over 1 million Americans suffer a slip.
The volume on the demonstration is a little bit low, but proceed.
In the U.S. annually because of these injuries.
Let me turn that up. Let me see if Representative North, if I can't let the next one be higher. This is another part of the manufacturing environment.
Clinicians estimate that 10% of people who step on a nail will develop an infection.
Once again, an individual. And if we talk about this being immersive, as we develop this out, these individuals will actually be moving around and interacting, allowing individuals to see and be immersed. We also have safety hazards that are not easily seen. So an individual would look around, find.
You know what the second most common reason for injuries is?
And then actually
would
have an opportunity
to hear that it is slip and fall accidents.
Have an opportunity.
How many accidents
to
are there?
Find or serve. The other thing this allows us to do is to actually give that experience and then create a system where people have credibility around it. So we can actually give credentials and certification around certain things from having created it in a completely virtual reality based world. So at this time, I'd like to thank you for allowing us to not only talk about the work that we want to do, demonstrate the work we want to do, and hearing from our stellar workforce. I appreciate the time that you're giving us today, and I would open it up for any questions that you might have. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Black, and also sharing the virtual reality, which is the new reality that we're facing. You know, we've been forced to be there by the pandemic, but it's also the time that we need to be investing in technology in a new system. So with that, any discussion, members? This is a great program. I see Chair Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to commend both MDI and Representative Jordan. I think I heard Mr. Black, and I will paraphrase, but we've got significant workforce challenges today. To me, the key strategy that MDI and Representative Jordan present is getting folks who tend to be on the sidelines into the game. And that's, I believe, where we need to go, and Representative Jordan and MDI are providing us a path forward on that. I think that enriches the lives of the folks that MDI works with. It enriches Minnesotans because we need the workforce. So I want to thank them both for bringing the bill forward and their presence today and work in the community. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Chair Dabney. I see no further discussion from any other member. Any closing remarks, Vice Chair John?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Dabney. That was a better conclusion than I think I could have said. So thank you to the committee for your time and support of MDI.
With that, I renew my motion for the House file, while I bring it up, to be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill, House File 30, sorry, folks, House File 3938. Thank you so much, Representative Jordan, for your presentation. Members, I skip the approval of the minutes. Lead Hamilton, can I get the approval for the minutes of March 21, 2022?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
All right, so the minutes, Lead Hamilton moves the approval of minutes for March 21, 2022. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Seeing none, the minutes for March 21, 2022 are now approved. With that, I'd like to welcome Chair Long, House File 4183. I will move House File 4183 to Labor, Industry, Veterans, and Military Affairs, Finance, and Policy Committee. Welcome to the committee, Chair Long. Please introduce your bill to us.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. House File 4183 ensures that Minnesota is building the strong, diverse workforce we need to transition to a clean energy future for our state. Minnesota's clean energy economy employs over 55,000 people across the state. It's one of the fastest growing sectors. Clean energy jobs in Minnesota, including energy efficiency, are growing at twice the rate of other sectors in the state. Green construction as well is one of the fastest growing industries in our entire economy, projected to grow 15% annually over the next decade. And it's no surprise we're having this success. Over 55% of Minnesota's electricity is now carbon free. Renewable energy is the state's single largest source of energy, and it has comprised 84% of all new energy generation in the last decade. We're also no slouch in the energy efficiency world. Minnesota ranks 9th in the nation for energy efficiency and number 1 in the Midwest. But sustaining this progress requires Minnesota to address major gaps in the workforce need to be a successful clean energy transition leader. According to a study of Minnesota's clean energy workforce conducted by Center for the Energy and Environment in 2019, 85% of energy efficiency employers in Minnesota have reported difficulty hiring. The construction trade workforce is aging. 29% of the existing energy efficiency workforce will retire in the next 4 years. And the energy efficiency industry is even less diverse than the overall state workforce, lacking both gender and racial diversity. So Minnesota must invest in a strong, diverse workforce to support our energy transition and rapidly expanding clean energy sectors. So House File 4183 would strengthen and diversify the clean energy workforce in Minnesota by investing in a unique partnership between the union construction apprenticeship programs that work in clean energy and energy efficiency and community organizations with broad and deep networks within Black, Latinx, and immigrant communities across Minnesota. It would provide a pathway for BIPOC Minnesotans into the union construction trades to gain quality training in high-demand fields while receiving supportive services to ensure success in training, employment, and retention. And it would ensure that Minnesota is developing the workforce needed to sustain and accelerate the state's transition to a green economy. I'll now turn it to my two testifiers, Mr. Chair, to talk further about the bill.
Thank you so much, Chair Long. I have Ms. Gonzalez-Avalos to testify on this bill. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Noor, members of the committee. My name is Emilia Gonzalez-Avalos. I am the Executive Director of Unidos Minnesota Education Fund, and I would like to thank you for the opportunity to testify this afternoon on House File 4183.
Did we lose Ms. Gonzalez-Avalos?
Community that works to advance social.
Ms. Gonzalez-Avalos, if you can turn off the camera because we're having difficulty on your connectivity. Please proceed.
Thank you so much, Chairman. Unidos Minnesota Education Fund is a grassroots organization rooted in immigrant and first-generation youth and the broader Latino community that works to advance social, racial, and economic justice for all. I am here to testify in strong support of House File 4183, which will provide much needed pathways for Black, Indigenous, and people of color communities into green construction and energy careers in Minnesota. The COVID-19 pandemic has exacerbated the racial disparities in Minnesota's labor market. Beneath these disparities lies the underlying reality of occupational segregation. Black and Latino workers are far more likely to work in low-wage sectors in our economy, the same sectors hardest hit by the pandemic. BIPOC workers are underrepresented, in fields that offer good wages, benefits, and real career pathways, including the clean energy and the energy efficiency sectors. But it does not have to be that way. House File 4183 will create pathways for workers of color into green construction careers with the potential for families sustaining wages, benefits, and strong futures. The partnership supported by House File 4183 is unique. The bill brings grassroots organization with our ability to build strong, trusted relationships with communities of color, together with the construction unions who bring deep industry knowledge and expertise. The legislation also invests in uniquely comprehensive approach to workforce development, creating sustained relationships and holistic support for community members. This bill also provides a model for how to build a strong and inclusive clean energy workforce that Minnesota needs. Unidos Minnesota Education Fund and New Justice Project are ready to contribute our skills and expertise to do this important work. We bring deep expertise in reaching and engaging excluded communities, Black, children of immigrants and refugees, and the formerly incarcerated. We bring the ability to identify what training and services our community members need to succeed and to provide that support in culturally appropriate ways. We bring our ability to cultivate strong networks and mentorships, creating shared cultures and experiences. Construction is a field that passes from generation to generation. Children follow their parents into construction work, who had followed their grandparents before them. Relationships and skills transfer to generation to from generation to generation. That's been true in my own family. My grandfather and my father were construction workers. My mother, an energy technician, climbed electrical poles and measured water conductivity in dams all over Mexico. With their inspiration, my younger brother became a civil engineer, and I grew up understanding the importance of energy and infrastructure to live and thrive in high regard to the workers that build the cities and towns that we enjoy. I know our communities and our families have a wealth of relationships and hands-on experience that can serve as a catalyst for generational social upward mobility through the trade careers. This bill provides the opportunity to keep a deep tradition for people of color in the trades. This bill will bring the communities we work with, excluded workers, Black workers, formerly incarcerated, the children of immigrants and refugees, into the trades so that their children and their grandchildren can follow their footsteps. Thank you, Representative Long, for your authorship of this legislation. And thank you again to the chair and the members of the committee for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you so much for your testimony. The next person on the list is Mr. Adams. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Noor and members of the committee. My name is Rod Adams. I'm the executive director of the New Justice Project. Minnesota. The New Justice Project is an organizing hub slash worker center that works to connect Black Minnesotans to jobs, resources, as well as issue campaigns around workers' rights, public safety, and democracy. So I'm here today to testify in strong support for HF 4183, the green training legislation. And really, to say it simply, this bill is about inclusion and equity, understanding how most of the population that the New Justice Project serves our Black youth and formerly incarcerated folks who live in North Minneapolis. For youth we work with coming straight out of high school, you know, not everyone wants to go to college, but their job options are often very limited. And many don't want to stay in service jobs or can't build a career network. And for folks coming out of incarceration, their criminal records are really a barrier to work, and they often don't have the support they need to get back on their feet. Also, we understand that unemployment numbers right now are at a record low. But the story for Black workers is totally different. While unemployment fell across the board at the end of 2021, the unemployment rate for Black people increased. Black teenagers are in particular struggling to find work right now, specifically coming out of the pandemic. Also, the truth behind unemployment numbers is that just many of our folks just aren't counted. Folks who just got out of prison, so they can't file for unemployment, but they've had so much trouble finding work that they're no longer looking. We have to not just look at employment, but at overall wealth. Minnesota has the third worst racial wealth gap in the country. For the folks we work with, the pathway to a green construction job is a pathway to a real career and economic mobility. It is directly targeted at addressing generational wealth and closing the wealth gap for Black families. Even I have experienced what a good union job looks like firsthand. My father spent 5 years in prison. When he got out, he joined the union and got a job at the airport. 10 years ago, he bought a house and then paid for my brother to go to college. When he got out, he got a union job and was able to do well for himself. This program is about giving folks who have not had the opportunity to have more than just a job. This is about true economic mobility, the ability for Black and brown folks to build a career, to buy a house, and support their families. This is about building intergenerational stability for Black and brown families. And also, this program is built on two genuine partnerships. First, it's built on a partnership between community organizations and unions. Our grassroots community groups can reach into communities beyond what the unions and construction industry can do, because it's what we do every day. For our current program, we have folks that come into our program because maybe an aunt or a mother or a grandmother came to a community meeting to talk to one of our organizers. Now, this aunt or grandmother is interested in construction work, of course, but they went home and talked to the nephew, and he came down to our office. Grassroots community organizations have the skill and reach to both grow and diversify the construction workforce. And this is also a partnership between the grassroots organizations and our community members. We're the ones they come to for help with housing, safety, or other support needs. We talk to them about all the issues going on in their lives. We build a trusted and lasting relationship that ensure those individuals can succeed. Minnesota has a gap in the workforce we need for our green economy future. This legislation invests in partnerships designed to fill that gap and to build generational economic stability within Black and brown communities. So I'll ask all committee members today and really urge you to push for your support for HF 4183. And I want to thank you, Chairman Knorr, and all committee members here for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you so much, Mr. Adams, for your testimony. And I see Lead Hamilton with hand raised. Please proceed with questions or any discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Long, or to either of the testifiers, over the years, I've worked with UNIDOS on various issues. And I'm researching some of the things on the website as far as their work experience, if you will, and there's been a strong focus on political education training and political advocacy, which is very important, right? Very extremely important. My question specifically is, do these organizations have workforce training experience, or would this be a new line of work for the organizations? And then what would be the measurable outcomes?
Shalom.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative Hamilton. I think the organizations can speak to that best, but I'll just say very briefly that I have a lot of confidence in the organization's ability to do this work, and I know that UNIDOS has worked on educational pathways work in the past and navigating the transition from high school to higher education and has done pilot programs on retention in this regard. So I think that they'll be well positioned to do this work, and I think Mr. Adams also spoke well to the work that they're doing already in connecting folks in community to jobs, but maybe I'll defer to them to speak on their own behalf.
Mr. Adams, if you have a brief response to that.
We are a new organization, but we have ran, over the past year, we've ran a workforce development or pathways fellowship, if you will, where we organized 15 community members to a soft skills program model, where we taught them things like interviewing, resume writing, safety in the workforce, know your rights. And then with a combination of that training and working with a program called Building Strong Communities, which I think a few of you are familiar with, we were able to place five of our fellows into Building Strong Communities. So for the past year, the last program that we've ran has been moving folks from our soft skills training program into the Building Strong Communities program. But what we're looking to do is to really house most of that programming, both soft skills and hard skills, inside of our work and inside of our program in partnership with labor unions, specifically the carpenters, to name one of the few.
Thank you, Mr. Adams. I think it's clear that this is a partnership with organized trade unions who have the tools and the skills to support this type of partnership. So it's more of a partnership. I see Ms. Gonzalez-Avalos.
Thank you, Chairman Noor. So both of our organizations have experience to build sustained relationships and provide culturally appropriate training and services. In a specific, Unidos Minnesota has worked in an education fund side, our C3 side, has worked alongside many public and private colleges and universities to create educational pathways and bring wealth of expertise in navigating transition from high school to higher education. The strategy to add training on the trades and pathways to trades is something that we've been waiting for, as none of all of our families are interested in building a pathway into college or higher education. So this is an additional pathway that we have been working on and envisioning for a long time. Unidos Minnesota Education Fund has implemented pilot programs for retention in community colleges and state colleges and universities, as well as private universities, including Osborne College. We were consultants for the Augie Pathways that help find ways for MCTC students of color to transition into a four-year institution. We have led several workshops on FAFSA and Minnesota Dream Act across the state, including workshops in Nobles County, Blue Earth, Scott, many counties that any county that calls us, we will go and develop workshops and support students to get ahead in higher ed. This is the first project that we have with the Partnership of the Trades, and we are very excited, and we've been waiting for this opportunity for a long time.
Thank you so much, Ms. Gonzalez-Avalos. So to Lead Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just in closing here, Representative Long, I have history working with Unidos, and I'm asking for forgiveness from Mr. Adams. I'm not as familiar with your group, but like I said, I do have experience working with Unidos, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for the group as well. So Representative Long, I'm going to support your bill moving out of committee, and that's it, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lead Hamilton. I don't see further discussion from members. To your closing remarks, Chair Long.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the support, Representative Hamilton. Very, very greatly appreciated. Senator Rarick is the lead author in the Senate, and we're certainly hoping that we can get to a point where we can move this really important work forward this session. So I very much appreciate this committee's consideration.
Thank you so much, Chair Long. I renew my motion, House File 4183, be referred to Labor, Industry, Veteran, and Military Affairs, Finance, and Policy Committee. Mr. Badri will now take the role.
Chair Noor.
Aye.
Vice Chair Zhang.
Aye.
Lead Hamilton.
Aye.
Baker. Baker. Daphne?
Daphne, aye.
Frankie?
Frankie, aye.
Greenman?
Aye.
Haley? Haley?
Haley, no.
Cagle?
Aye.
Katiza Watun?
Aye.
Olsen?
Aye.
Zhang?
Aye.
Baker? Baker? Chair Noor, we have 10 ayes and 1 nay.
With 10 ayes and 1 nay, Chair Long, you're on your way to the next committee. So thank you so much for bringing this bill forward and to the testifiers. The next bill we have... Go ahead, Chair Long. Sorry, didn't want to cut you off.
I just said thank you.
All right, thanks. The next bill we have is House File 4117, Vice Chair Hassan. Welcome back to the committee. I'll move House File 4117. Someone is unmuted.
That's me. Sorry, Mr. Chair. I'm in another committee. Sorry.
All right, no problem. I move House File 4117 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. To your bill, Vice Chair Hassan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the opportunity to present House File 4117. House File 4117 is a response to an urgent need. Due to COVID-19, we have a worker shortage in many areas, including in healthcare. One area that's overlooked but critical in the continuum of care is phlebotomy, also known as the process of drawing blood. Within the Department of Employment and Economic Development, I am not aware of any competitive grants that can fund this gap in workers. Therefore, I'm bringing forward this bill to fast-track training and certification opportunities to help close that healthcare worker gap in a number of cities across the state, including the Twin Cities and Greater Minnesota. With that, Mr. Chair, I have a couple testifiers to explain more detail in this ask, and we'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hassan. I see Mr. Farah. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, thank you so much. Members of this committee, good afternoon. I would like to thank Representative Hassan for her leadership to bring this bill before you. My name is Mohamed Farah. I'm the executive director of Kajok, a nationally recognized Somali youth development organization tailored towards enriching the lives of Somali American youth by utilizing the positive elements of education, mentoring, employment, and the arts. On behalf of all Minnesotans, I urge that you support House File 4117. The mission of Kajok is to create a better world by providing community-based, culturally specific programs and services to youth and their families through education, the arts, and the economic development. We are a statewide organization that works primarily with the East African community across the state. Kajok was established in 2007 to give voice and leadership to young people across our state. Kajok focuses its efforts on the development of youth and families in making them as economically sufficient as possible. Providing an avenue of employment and setting career pathways is the center of what we do. We believe we have a role in creating a more diverse workforce across our state. During the pandemic, COVID-19 has created a shortage of workers in a lot of industries, but more importantly, in the health industry. This is why we will be partnering with the Pathway Careers Training and Center to provide free phlebotomy training and certification, as well as job placements for individuals across from our state. The Training Center is a premier training institution in Minnesota dedicated to increasing career development through technical education in order to improve economic progress through workforce development initiatives. Their training program focuses on helping individuals who are motivated in achieving career goals by providing them with quality training skills, knowledge, and confidence necessary to become certified in a growing and highly competitive career. With our partnership with the Training Center, we are expecting to train over 1,300 individuals with the credentials and the certification that are needed to succeed in a rewarding healthcare career in laboratories, hospitals, clinics, and other skills and knowledge needed to successfully collect blood specimens from patients and prepare them for testing and laboratory analysis. Recruitment and outreach for this program will be done in areas including but not limited to the Twin Cities, St. Cloud, Wilmere, Rochester, Moorhead, Faribault, Owatonna, Mankato, Austin, and other locations. The need for this funding and the need for this bill is obvious and vital. We have companies that are ready to hire phlebotomy technicians right now as we're speaking. Again, I would like to thank Representative Hassan for her leadership and the advocacy for this bill. Mr. Chair and members, with your support, we can get a lot of people to work right away. And I hope you can consider this bill heavily. Thank you for your time and your support for House File 4117. And I did have, I had a testifier right after me, but there was an emergency that came up, so I apologize. She's not able to attend, but I'll take on any questions or any member from the members. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Farah, for your bill. So we don't have any individuals who are here to testify. If they are, please let us know. With that, members, any discussion? See none. Vice Chair Hassan, your closing remarks.
Oh, sorry, I muted. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a good bill, and I hope you can support. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Vice Chair Hassan and Mr. Farah, for the testimony. We always are looking for ways to support employers, and I appreciate you bringing the bill forward. I renew my motion House File 4117 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you so much for being here today. The next bill for consideration is House File 4134. Representative Krisha, welcome to the committee, and we'll move House File 4134 be laid over for possible inclusion. And I also see that you have a D2 amendment, Representative Krisha.
I do have the D2 amendment. I would like to have that added to get the bill in the shape for presentation.
All right. I will move the D2 amendment. Any discussion from members? See none. All those in favor of the DE2 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed? See none. The amendment is now adopted. To your bill as amended, Representative Krisha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the members. House File 4134 seeks funding for a big void that we have in rural Minnesota, which is workforce centers and funding around that. Since the COVID and some of the contraction that's happened with the Department of Deed, we've seen rural workforce centers go to more of a virtual setting, which leaves a void for people who are displaced having a location to walk into and seek help. This grant, this funding seeks to expand that. And I have three testifiers who can do a way better job of explaining the need for this than I can. So I'd like to turn this over to them, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Representative Krisha. I see the first testifier on the list is Mr. Schultz. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thanks for the opportunity to testify before you today. My name is Scott Schulte, S-C-H-U-L-T-E. I am the chair of the Minnesota Association of Workforce Boards. I'm also the chief local elected official of the Anoka County Workforce Development Board, and I'm a business owner. I'm here today in support of House File 4134, which would provide $20 million in funding to local workforce development boards to address critical workforce needs in Minnesota's 87 counties. Employer-led local workforce boards are responsible for the strategic investment of employment and training funding in their communities. Local boards write local plans as required by the Federal Workforce Investment and Opportunity Act, otherwise known as WIOA, that detail proven strategies the board will use to meet the needs of local economies through a highly integrated and inclusive system of workforce partners. This includes developing career pathways and sector partnerships, serving job seekers and employers, and addressing workforce and economic development issues in their areas. Minnesota's local workforce development boards have a track record of success, consistently meeting or exceeding federal performance measures. However, a disinvestment in workforce funding at the federal level over the last several years has greatly impacted our ability to fully realize the strategies needed to address today's current challenges, including racial inequities and statewide workforce shortages. Over the last decade, federal funding for workforce systems has decreased by nearly 20%, adjusted for inflation. Forecasts from the Federal Department of Labor show further reductions in funding in the next program year for all of Minnesota. Local boards partner closely with the Department of Employment and Economic Development, or DEED, to operate the nearly 50 career force locations across the state. This past year, DEED has changed its service delivery model to focus on customers receiving unemployment insurance. We appreciate Deed's partnership and believe this level of outreach is important on a statewide level. This change has forced local boards to pivot to fill gaps on the local level. Investment is needed so we can continue to offer the breadth and depth of services expected and required. Local boards are hearing from employers daily that they need workers and they need help recruiting, training, and retaining talent. As a county commissioner and a business owner, I have firsthand knowledge of how our workforce challenges are crippling businesses. On the job seeker side, Minnesota has unlimited opportunities in high demand and well-paying fields, such as technology, healthcare, and manufacturing. It's our role to make sure everyone in the state has the same opportunity to enter these fields with the education and training needed to make them competitive. As Minnesota's workforce system, our local workforce boards want to be able to meet the moment. As you are all aware, the state's workforce shortage and racial disparities were only worsened by the pandemic. Local boards and their partners are working to address these critical issues, but can do so much more with additional funding, such as conduct targeted outreach and marketing, focus on underserved populations with supportive services and case management, and reinforce meaningful partnerships between stakeholders in education, workforce, economic development, and other areas. In closing, I urge you to support House File 4134, which will provide resources to benefit every corner of the state of Minnesota, including each of your districts. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you again.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Schulte. I appreciate your testimony. The next person on the schedule is the Minnesota Association of Workforce Board Director. Fortney, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Noor. I'm Gina Fortney. It's a pleasure to be here to testify for you today. And thank you to Representative Kreisha for his leadership on this bill. I am the director of the Minnesota Association of Workforce Boards, or MOB. Our membership includes the 16 local workforce development boards around the state. They direct the workforce services in all 87 counties. I'm here today to support HF 4134, which provides necessary funding to advance work the boards are undertaking to meet local job seeker and employer needs. As Commissioner Schulte testified, the state is facing significant workforce challenges that have been compounded by the COVID-19 pandemic. Local workforce boards need additional funding to address these challenges. Our current funding is tied to federal and state program requirements, which does not lend much flexibility to implement innovative strategies required at this unprecedented time. The critical needs we have right now are equipping all job seekers for employment, supporting our career force locations, conducting outreach and marketing, and assisting employers with their recruitment and retention strategies. To properly support both youth and adult job seekers with barriers to employment, we need additional and flexible funding to provide support services, connections to education and training, case management, and to strengthen our career pathway systems that make entrance to high demand industries more accessible. On the employer side, we are seeing requests from businesses like never before. Most are hurting for skilled workers and need assistance with recruiting strategies and identifying untapped talent. Local boards have increased their work around diversity, equity, and inclusion in partnership with employers. With the population of Minnesota continuing to diversify, employers are asking for assistance with ensuring their hiring practices and work environments are inclusive. Local boards are providing the support in several ways based on employer needs. Our local boards operate the nearly 50 career force locations across the state, and you should have a map of those in your handouts today. Additional funding would ensure that we can support the staffing and infrastructure needed for the centers to be open and accessible to everyone who needs them. Serving people in person via our centers is important. Data shows that people need people, and our intensive in-person connections with job seekers lead to the success we have as a system. In Greater Minnesota, where broadband is not fully available or affordable, our career force locations are critical for job seekers to search for jobs, write resumes, and most importantly, get staff assistance on computers when needed. Our current funding does not allow for outreach and marketing, which makes it difficult to engage with people who have dropped out of the workforce or who are seeking new jobs. Our goal is to connect with greater numbers of unemployed or underemployed people and quickly get them ready for employment and high-quality jobs. The specific uses for the funding will differ across the state based on the needs of each local area. Ian Vincent, the chair of the Duluth Workforce Development Board, is here today to share how the funding will be used to meet critical needs in the Duluth area. The uses will be tied to each board's local plans required by WIOA. These local plans were previously approved by DEED and are aligned with the WIOA State Plan submitted to the Department of Labor by the Governor's Workforce Development Board. These plans are important blueprints the state and local boards follow to ensure our work is tied to our state's vision, which is a healthy economy where every Minnesotan has meaningful employment and a family-sustaining wage, and where all employers are able to fill jobs in demand. When you invest in local boards, you're not investing in a program, but in the entire workforce system that serves every county. We leverage federal, state, and local dollars for maximum benefit. These strategies have a proven impact. On average, our programs triple their return on every $1 invested. I urge you to support HF 4134. Thank you, Chair Noor and members, for the opportunity to testify, and I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you so much, Ms. Fortney, for your testimony. I see Mr. Vincent ready to proceed. Please introduce yourself for the record, and I will also be calling the new Deputy Commissioner, Majors, once we are done, because we may want to welcome him too at the same time. So, Mr. Vincent, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Noor and members of the committee. My name is Ian Vincent, V-I-N-C-E-N-T. I'm the senior business developer at Apex, which is an economic development nonprofit based here in Duluth. Additionally, I serve as the chair of the Duluth Workforce Development Board, and also I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Workforce Boards. We have an unprecedented demand for workers here in Duluth. I don't know about the rest of you folks around the state. Well, actually, I do. It's a difficult field out there. Locally, we have about 2 job openings for every available job seeker, and these employers need help. At the same time, many job seekers need more intensive, targeted support to access education and training, and in many cases, just to retain the employment they already have. This is a moment of opportunity where investment in tailored local solutions will help ensure we as a city of Duluth and us as a state of Minnesota recover from the pandemic stronger than before, or as strong as we possibly could. Examples of how we would like to locally use funding from this bill at the Duluth Workforce Board include 6 things. And I'm gonna read these verbatim, so excuse me for that. 1, provide intentional, targeted, proactive support to employers in the region to help them navigate and address their workforce challenges. This would be a new effort for us. 2, advance equity and inclusion goals, and as part of this, we'll engage BIPOC-led and community-based organizations as partners in the workforce system through sort of a hub-and-spoke model. 3, support expansion of career pathways training in K-12 and secondary education. This is something I'm personally very passionate about. 4, launch a manufacturing sector strategy, given the high need for manufacturing workers in our region, which is growing. This type of strategy is an industry-driven model that pulls together multiple stakeholders to build a skilled workforce in a given industry. That's what a sector strategy is. 5, support local and regional talent attraction efforts, very important. And finally, 6, connect more job seekers to workforce services offered through various formats and matched to specific individual needs. Personally, I'm very proud to support this bill, not just in my role as chair of the Duluth Workforce Board, but also in my day-to-day as a professional economic developer who knows firsthand the difficulty and competitiveness of business attraction and expansion within our state of Minnesota and across the United States as a whole. Major employers are having a very hard time expanding in our city locally and in many cases across our state. Just one brief crucial example of this is Cirrus Aircraft, which is headquartered here in Duluth. They're the worldwide market leader in private aircraft production with an almost 50% industry market share. They're producing over 600 planes a year, yet they still are backordered about 3 years right now, I believe. Cirrus currently employs 1,206 people in our city and has over 200 vacant job openings. Cirrus also currently has operations in five other states. Cirrus also has a 10-year plan to triple the size of their company. And trust me, they will be able to do it. The only question is, where will this growth take place? Because it could be anywhere. It's Cirrus's job to produce aircrafts. It's my job, and I believe all of our jobs on this Zoom meeting right now, to assure that those aircrafts continue to be made in Minnesota. And this is just one example of many across the state of companies having to postpone or pause plans for expansion, which actively would grow our economy as a state and make us more attractive to other potential incoming projects. Our workforce system needs all the help we can get to get there. So I urge you to please support House File 4134 and provide our state workforce boards a tremendous amount of flexibility to ensure our programs are serving each community's unique needs. And with that, I'd like to thank you, Chair Noor, and members of the committee. Myself and the rest of our rest of the testifiers of this bill would be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you, Mr. Vincent, for your testimony to the new Deputy Commissioner. May I just welcome to the committee. Just wanted to give you an opportunity to introduce yourself, and then we'll start asking questions. Welcome and congratulations again.
Well, thank you, Chairman Noor, and hello, everyone, the rest of the committee. Good afternoon. My name is Mark Majors. I'm the new Deputy Commissioner of Workforce Development. I think today is my third day on the job, even though I've been with DEED for about 3 years. So I'm kind of getting into my new role. I'm really excited about getting to know you, the members of the committee, and working with you all to address some of the challenges that you've heard today and before. So I'll be reaching out to you and your teams in the future to get a chance to hear from you, your thoughts about how we can increase the number of folks, get them into the workforce. I'll stop there, but thank you, Chairman Noor, for the opportunity.
Well, thank you so much. I know this topic is really, really an important topic, and the task ahead and the work ahead that you tasked is critical to our state and to make sure that we move together. So looking forward to how we can transform the Workforce Development Funds, which really needs to be changed. And thanks to the governor's recommendation, it's included in that. We didn't take care of that last session. And also the making it more innovative and creative, because that's what it requires us to do. Lead Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I'd like to say welcome, Deputy Commissioner Majors. I look forward to working with you in this role. I appreciate you being here in committee as well. Representative Kreisha, I want to thank you and to your testifiers for sharing with us some of the outcomes. I know there's been many, many more stories that you could provide us with additional outcomes as well. That's always helpful when we're debating these bills or deciding what bills to be supporting, is to hear in the concrete outcomes. So I thank you for that. Mr. Chairman, would it be appropriate at this time, otherwise I can wait, could you help us a little bit in understanding? We're hearing all these bills today. Do we have a supplemental budget target? Do we know what that amount's going to be? And tell us a little bit about an omnibus bill that may or may not be moving forward out of this committee.
Thank you so much, Lead Hamilton. That's a good question. We are looking into ways to get an omnibus bill and also trying to work out and get a good budget target whenever possible. So stay tuned. There'll be more information coming soon on that. Thank you so much for asking the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And if we do have one, I would ask you to strongly consider Representative Kreisha's bill here. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And also, in our jurisdiction, one of the reasons that I wanted to mention the Deputy Commissioner is we do have the Workforce Development Fund, which funds also the workforce boards. And so we're looking at various places where we can provide that support. That is solely in our jurisdiction, doesn't require any budget resolution for us to spend that money. With that, Representative Krish, I wanted to give you your closing remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Lead Hamilton, for those encouraging and supportive comments. I would just add two things. Number one, thank you to my testifiers and Mr. Vincent and Apex Did not get a chance to mention this, but Apex and Duluth has done an amazing job with their virtual reality presentations as well. And if you haven't had a chance to go out and see that, I know that Eric Black talked about it with MDI, but I wanted to just point out that that is amazing technology, and we have folks on this call that have leveraged that as well. The last thing I would just say is thank you, members, Mr. Chair, for your support, and I hope that you can get behind this real initiative.
Thank you, Representative Krisha. So I renew my motion, House File 4134B, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you to the testifiers. Look forward to working together on this challenge that we are all facing. With that, the next bill for consideration is House File 4460. Representative Wozlawick, welcome to the committee. I move that House File 4460 be laid over for possible inclusion. Please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So as many of you know, because you've participated in the arts in Minnesota, we have a really vibrant arts community in our state. And in fact, you know, I serve on the Legacy Committee, and one thing that we've heard in Legacy is that we are the envy of other states in that we have so much investment in the arts in our state. That includes local communities, in this case, the Wiper Lake community and surrounding suburbs. And we have a great art center there, the Wiper Center for the Arts, and just a great sort of a beginning of an arts district in our community. And, you know, one thing that I think folks maybe don't think about if they're not in the arts themselves is how difficult it can sometimes be to get into the field, to become an artist, and to also take those skills to go to build the skills and then to take those skills with them in their career. So what this bill does, House File 4460, is it gets a grant from DEED for $600,000 to the Wiper Center for the Arts to establish a paid internship program for high school students. And I have two testifiers with me today from the Wiper Center for the Arts to talk more about what this bill would help them do and what the internship program would look like.
Thank you so much, Vice Chair Wozlawick. I see Mr. Alex LeGros. If I made a mistake, let me know. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Noor, and good afternoon. Thank you for that great introduction to Representative Wozlawick. My name is Alex LeGros. I'm the Development Director at White Bear Center for the Arts. I'm here to give you a short overview about White Bear Center for the Arts before I turn it over to our artist in residence, Sing Lee, who will talk to you a little bit about this specific program. White Bear Center for the Arts is all about creating community through art. Our reach is from the urban cores of Minneapolis and St. Paul through the suburban and rural cities surrounding the Greater Northeast Metro region. Our mission at White Bear Center for the Arts is to enrich lives by celebrating art, nourish imagination by inspiring creativity, and build understanding by connecting people. We were founded as a 501c3 nonprofit in 1968, but transformed after we opened our building in 2013. By working with artists throughout the community, our programs grew rapidly. In 2015, an Americans for the Arts study found that White Bear Center for the Arts generates $1.7 million in local economic impact, which opened people's eyes to the kind of power the arts can have. WBCA completed an expansion to our facility during the pandemic and now has a clay center, 5 flexible classrooms, 3 gallery spaces, an arts resource library, and an outdoor campus that includes a Four Seasons labyrinth and other activity spaces. Thank you again to Representatives Jay Zhang and Amy Wozlawick for visiting us this March and seeing this firsthand. Today, WBCA offers more than 1,000 arts classes, events, and exhibitions year-round. We serve about 20,000 people each year from all generations and abilities, and that includes about 6,500 youth. Our arts and elementary program, for example, has for more than a decade provided visual arts classes for all students in the local elementary schools. Our services didn't stop during the pandemic, and we've continued developing new models that help Minnesotans access arts activities in new ways and provide pathways to that kind of joy, social connection, and creative inspiration that we all know is so needed in our time. This work would be impossible without artists and creative workers. More than 500 artists are engaged through WBCA programs each year, not only as teachers and in our gallery programs, but also as leaders like Sing Lee. So with that, thank you, and I'll turn it over to Sing to talk about this program.
Thank you so much, Mr. LeGros, and welcome to the committee, Mr. Lee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Yes, thank you, Chair.
My name is Sang Lee. I'm an artist in residence at White Bear Center for the Arts. I've been working there for the last 2 years, but then I've also shown my work there and have known about the Arts Center for a long time. We're here today to really be able to talk about developing a youth program that pays students, high school students, a competitive wage that allows for them to really come in to do career development through an arts perspective. I know personally, coming from a community of color and a community that is from an underserved community, the challenges of using the arts as something to be able to do, to get a job or to get employment from. So I come from that perspective of understanding the challenges, and I know that if we do something like this, it would be beneficial to all our community members, especially in the Northeast Metro area, in your surrounding areas like North St. Paul, Lionel Lakes, and then Maplewood, and of course St. Paul. But it's a place where I think that we know that we can have a safe environment for kids from all over to come in and be able to work along with the center to help them be better at developing their basic career skills, such as, sending emails, doing social media, doing front desk, customer service, working in our stores, working with teaching artists, helping with events, and doing membership work. So these are all things that White Bear Center for the Arts already does really well, but we can use this, we can start this program with the appropriate funding to allow for us to really be able to bring youth in, pay them, and then be able to have them ready to be able to go out to the workforce to continue doing art or be able to help in wherever that they want to be in. And I want to make it really clear that this program is an art center, but we're here to, of course, the youth who come into this program is going to learn more than about making artwork. They're going to be really coming in to help, develop themselves as a professional and work alongside professionals at the same time to do career building skills and do problem solving skills that they'll need along the lines, even if they don't continue to go to post-secondary education and just continue to go directly into the workforce. It's something that I think a lot of students would be beneficial. This would be beneficial for students, and the emphasis of really paying for student work. That's key to get them into the center, to get them to develop these skills and to really invest in them and show to them that there is value of having this kind of resource and program available and, have this kind of program available for them.
Thank you so much, Mr. Lee, for your testimony. I see Vice Chair Zhong with a question. Please proceed.
I just have a comment. I really want to thank Vice Chair Wazlowick for carrying this bill. I've had the opportunity to tour the Art Center maybe about a month ago, and also know that Mr. Lee is a very well-known national artist, especially in the API community. And so I know of his work and what he has done in community, and I'm very thrilled that Vice Chair Wazlowick, you are taking this opportunity to help amplify a need in community. And so if there's anything I can do to support moving this forward, please do let me know. But I just want to say I appreciate the work that you're doing, and especially to the White Bear Arts Center and Mr. Lee for all you do for community.
Thank you, Vice Chair Zhong. Any further discussion from members? See none. Vice Chair Wazlowick, do you have any closing testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not really anything else to add. I just think this is an opportunity for us to invest in something that's a little bit different and a little bit new, but something that offers a lot of opportunities for high school students to not only learn skills but to be paid a good wage to do it. It's often difficult for students to find those sorts of opportunities, so look forward to hoping that this will move forward so we can start the program and hopefully expand it once we've done a one group of it. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Vice Chair Wazlowick. With that, I renew my motion that House File 4460 be laid over for possible inclusion. in the omnibus bill. The next bill for consideration is House File 4278. Representative Cortizo Watun, welcome to your committee. Please move and introduce your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that House File 4278 be before the committee for possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill.
Please proceed.
Members, House File 4278 is a one-time funding request to refresh a comprehensive study of our early childhood workforce. This is not a new topic, as we know from our joint meeting that we heard very early on this session with the Early Childhood Committee. The early childhood industry and workforce in general is the workforce behind all of the workforces in the state of Minnesota. So this study would renew data that we have. The most comparable data that we have is over a decade old, which is from a study done by Wilder through DHS. With childcare and early education staffing levels in crisis mode, it's critical for legislators and advocates alike to have the most current and comprehensive data on who actually is in the workforce, why they've entered the early childhood workforce, why they're leaving, what benefits they have available to them, any barriers to entry, et cetera. So because obviously this is a workforce issue, we are working with DEED on the language, and MDE did give some additional feedback that was reflected in a prior amendment in the Early Childhood Committee. This study isn't just about where we have shortages. It's more about trying to figure out the baseline of the field and where it is when it comes to teachers of color, education levels, access to benefits, like I mentioned. In other words, it would help the help with the many of our goals in diversifying the field and being able to offer additional information and work supports to folks in the industry. Whereas the analysis of how many kids need care and how many staff are on site or who has been closing their doors over not only the past 2 years, but the past decade, has been the topic of and focus of many other recent surveys. This will give us a more unique and current perspective on with which to examine the persisting challenges in our early childhood systems and just how COVID has exacerbated some of those issues. Transforming Minnesota's early childhood workforce is advocating for this, and it's made up of folks from Child Care Aware, the West Central Initiative, Think Small, and various agency staff. Today, Mr. Chair, I have with me Ann McCulley from Child Care Aware to share her thoughts and discuss a little bit more about how the data from this study would be used. Thank you.
Ms. McCulley, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Ann McCulley. I am Executive Director of Child Care Aware of Minnesota, and I'm here to speak in support of House File 4278. The bill reflects an interest from many partners. It is the top legislative priority, as Representative Cotizo Watun mentioned, of Transforming Minnesota's Early Childhood Workforce Project. We are a public-private initiative formed in 2016 to really research, analyze, consider, and recommend policy issues related to the early childhood workforce. And the reason for this bill is straightforward, as you heard. When we're considering the needs of our early educators, those adults in the room, as I like to say, in all of the settings named in the bill, we simply don't know the current overall composition of our audience. The last comprehensive report, as mentioned, was in 2012, and that really at that time helped set a baseline for us for measuring workforce elements such as race, ethnicity, languages, wages, benefits, et cetera, levels of education. Since 2012, if the data does exist at all, it exists in bits and pieces all around in different places, and it doesn't reflect the changes that have happened since the pandemic. And I think we can all anticipate that there have been several. For instance, ways that we would apply this data, just to have for context, the work of the Great Start for All Minnesota Children Task Force has as one of its three main focus areas, ensuring that Minnesota's early childhood educators are qualified, diverse, supported, and equitably compensated, regardless of setting. So unless we know where we're starting in those categories, it's going to be hard to implement recommendations that will be coming forward next year. Likewise, my agency implements both the Teach Early Childhood Scholarship Program and the Retain Grant Program, which this legislature authorized additional funding for last year. That is a program that helps people either attain their higher education degree or stay in the field once they've had that degree. And so having better up-to-date data on where our early educators already have degrees or certification really will help us in terms of pinpointing where to do outreach and promotion. And finally, the upcoming launch of the new One-Stop Assistance Network, also passed by this legislature last year, which is a broader capacity building initiative, will really benefit from understanding the demographic data, in particular about our early childhood field. We want to build a workforce that best reflects the needs of the children and families in Minnesota, so understanding where we're starting will help us understand where we need to go. So I urge you to support this bill for a comprehensive early childhood workforce study. And thank you. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Members, any discussion? You know, we've had a lot about early childhood and childcare and the challenges that we're facing. So this is a critical, important bill that we need to be considering based on the need that we hear from across the state. And with that, I don't see any hands raised. Thank you so much to Representative Cotizo. Please proceed with your closing remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'll just reiterate that here on this committee in particular, we know what challenges are facing not only young families, but also employers across the state. And this study will help us get a baseline on what where we're at and where we can go to do better. So I appreciate the consideration. Thank you.
Thank you so much. With that, Representative Cotizo Atun renews her motion that House File 4278 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you so much to the testifier. And with that, we have only 8 minutes, but I'll transfer the chairmanship to Vice Chair Jay Jong.
Chair Noor, would you like to make a motion your bill and introduce it?
Thank you so much, Chair Zhong. I have House File 4123. I would like to move that this house, this bill to be laid over for possible inclusion. Members, we know the challenges that we're facing as a state, and especially when it comes to the youth and the challenges that they have faced, especially the youth from Minneapolis with the pandemic, with the murder of George Floyd, with the school disruption, and many things that they've gone through. And I think we have to look into from the perspective of providing support and also addressing the needs for the future workforce. This bill is a great opportunity for us to invest in Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board, Teen Teamworks, which has existed for the youth for a long time. Especially this year, knowing that many at risk or at opportunity youth, I don't like to use the risk youth, will have an opportunity to have soft skills, hard skills. Our members with the workforce shortage expected to get worse. We don't have a single potential worker to waste. We have to get ready to invest in our youth at a younger stage. And this also will help address some of the other challenges in the society, as we all know. And I ask for your support on this bill, and I'll turn over to my testifier.
Please proceed. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Hello, my name is Mary Lynn Pulcher, and I'm the manager for environmental education and youth employment for the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board. And thank you for having me here today, and I'll talk as fast as I can so we can hit your deadline. So Teen Teamworks, I'm sure many of you are aware of, it's been around for a long time, and it's been an important program in the city of Minneapolis, specifically targeting Promise Youth in particular, North Minneapolis and in South Central Minneapolis. And we focus on teenagers ages 14 to 18. The majority of them are in the 14 to 15. 90% are from communities of color. The youth work on hard skills. They are out in the field and with a crew leader, a mentor, an adult mentor who's with them the whole entire season, helping them with on-the-job skills. They do work readiness training one morning a week, and they're working for us for 9 weeks, 28 hours a week, and it's a really good program, and we're working on it to have them come back again and again and again so that we are building a workforce both for us and for other green and park-focused jobs. So we have partnerships with Public Works and other entities to try and move these kids into jobs as park keepers, as working as inspections for the city, things like that. So this funding really would help us reach 120 youth. It hires 12 site supervisors. It gets us two work readiness trainers. That would be part of this as well. And then we also would be able to do some shoulder season work as well, so that we're kind of keeping the kids occupied, you know, a little bit later into the season, not just pure summer. And I have to say, when we do a post-survey of the youth, you can't underestimate the importance of having a paycheck for these teenagers. I had to write it down because I couldn't memorize it, but these are just some of the highlights when we ask kids, what did they do with their summer paycheck? They paid for school supplies, clothes, shoes, and helping my parents buy food. I gave it to my parents. I helped my grandma pay the bills. I paid for two shirts, gas, shoes, my fishing reel, and food. And I'm helping my mom buy food and other stuff. So the paycheck itself is a really big deal for why we need to provide this opportunity for youth to work in the parks. And for us, we see this huge demand as well, where we don't have enough workers to fill our seasonal jobs, our upcoming park keeper full-time jobs. And then this huge increase for a need of for youth and young adults to have the skill sets to work in stormwater management areas. If you really look at BMPs in the city of Minneapolis and elsewhere, that's a huge labor gap at this point in time, and doing more training related to that. So that's something that we're also working towards, again, to have youth step through, come back when you're 14, 15, come back again. And by the time you graduate out of high school and with us in Team Teamworks, you had multiple job experiences so that you are ready to go and work for us in a full-time capacity. So there, I think I did that as fast as I could. Thank you for listening. And if you have any questions, let me know.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions, members? Seeing none, Chair Noor, would you like to renew your motion or close your statements?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we all remember when we got our fast check, especially when you start doing work. That is one of the things that is most valuable. And giving people an opportunity at that stage really builds their future in a better opportunity. I like the way Ms. Polsha, you know, stated, it's the promised youth. We don't like to call them the, you know, at-risk youth. So I think we will be able to change some of our terminologies at the same time. But I look forward to supporting the youth across the state and provide them with the opportunity that they need. And with that, I renew my motion. House file 4123 delayed over for possible inclusion. I see Lead Hamilton raising hands, and also Haley. Maybe it's a different conversation, but I'll let Chair Zhong handle it.
Lead Hamilton.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, it's a totally different discussion. So is it appropriate now?
Let me transfer the gavel back to Chair Nord, and you can he can respond back to you.
All right, thank you so much. You. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Proceed, Lead Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I appreciate you answering my conversation earlier about somewhat of the roadmap here. If we're going to be putting together an omnibus bill and if we're going to have a target for supplemental budget. My next question relates to the UI Trust Fund again. Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering when we're going to be able to hear that bill, actually hear the bill on the House floor so that we can debate the merits of that. And subsequently, I would like to get back to the practice where we pass things off the House floor, the Speaker appoints conferees, and then we go in with the Senate to work out the differences. Right now, it seems like all we're doing is waiting on our leaders to tell us what to do. And I've been here for a long time, 18 years. This is my last year. And, you know, it's just really unfortunate that that's the direction that it's heading, Mr. Chairman. So can you let us know where the UI Trust Fund, the bill is, when can we expect it on the House floor, and And can we get back to having some, you know, being relevant again, if you will, as individual members? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Lead Hamilton. I think you asked a good question. We were waiting for some changes to the House File 1035. I think we're getting close to. And as we get close to, I'm sure we will have this bill move forward through the Ways and Means. We just got another change that we are looking into to make sure that we finalize that bill. Any conversation happening at leadership level is always welcome. I think we've had some prior conversation, which Representative Haley was involved in. And I think we made some statements, but there was any agreement between the other body, which I don't like to use that term, but the Senate, and also to start focusing on what is next for the UI Trust Fund. Representative Haley.
Thank you, Chair Noor, and thank you, Lead Hamilton. I share the concern about continuing to move the ball forward for a solution on the UI situation. But I wanted to just comment quickly. I didn't have a chance to comment on Representative Kreisch's bill on the workforce development boards. I had to take a constituent phone call, but I wanted to just go on record with my support for that bill. I do serve on the governor's workforce development board, and so I appreciate that being brought forward and wanted to just emphasize two points that the testifiers brought up, that although we have a WIOA workforce plan, that those monies do have federal constraints. And so the testifiers, when they talked about local flexibility and how they use the money, I want to support that. It is very important. And they are the feet on the street and know the employers the best, and also the future employees, and know how to kind of work around the gaps that those future workers may have, whether it's transportation or daycare or just how to, you know, get the application filled out online. So it's an important part of our solution to address our workforce shortages. And so just wanted to speak very briefly in support of that. Thank you, Chair Noor, for the opportunity.
Thank you, Representative Haley, for your statement there. So members, we're going to be meeting in person, hybrid meeting on Monday, full agenda on that day. So please inform the CA in case of you're unable to join us in person or how you intend to proceed with that. We don't have any other agenda items on the schedule. We are now adjourned.